capable. It's a word that was used oftentimes to speak of one who was able to do what he was trying to do. So not necessarily the strongest in the pack, though we know that God is. That's not what Daniel is trying to extol here. What he's trying to extol is the fact that not only does God know what's going to happen, not only does he have the wisdom to take what's going to happen and use it for his purposes, but God has the capability of bringing it to pass. And as Daniel thought about this dream that he has been enlightened to and the interpretation of this dream, everything that this dream will entail, it's good news for Daniel. It's great news for Daniel, this dream. He recognizes that this dream is going to be a victory for his God. And yet what he is extolling here is the fact that God is capable of seeing the things that were in this dream come to pass. Job attributes this same characteristic to God. In Job 12:13, he said this, "With him," speaking of God, "is wisdom and strength. He hath counsel and understanding." With God is wisdom, exactly what Daniel just extolled, and strength. The same word used for might here, wisdom and might, are found with God. He hath counsel and understanding. Daniel is saying that God has the wisdom to harness his omniscience and the capability to carry out his wise plan. So God has that wisdom. God has that omniscience. God has that capability. Now let's make this practical. Let's make this personal. Do you know that God knows? Do you know that God knows? When you have troubles in your life, do you know that God knows? When you have distresses in your life, do you know that God knows? When you're confused, do you know that God knows? When you don't know what to do, do you know that God does? You need help. God knows how to help. We serve a God that knows. A God that has knowledge, but then he has wisdom. He can take that knowledge, the fact that he knows your troubles, the fact that he knows your confusions, your distresses. He knows that decision that has to be made and you don't know what decision should be made. He does. He knows when everything is up in the air and you're just waiting for things to fall where they may and you don't know where they're going to fall. Well, God does. And not only does he know, but he has the wisdom to take what he knows and work it for his purposes. Isn't that Romans 8:28? For we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them that are the called according to his purpose. Well, how can we know? Well, we can know because we know God knows. Right? Because we know God knows. Because he has the wisdom to bring about that which he knows, and because he has the capability to see it done. Daniel found himself in an impossible situation. Imagine this situation. Just try to imagine it. Now, yes, we know that Daniel had been given the gift of interpretation. He was not given the gift of telepathy. That wasn't a part, we don't see that in the Bible. He had committed himself to interpreting the dream for a man when he didn't even know the dream. He literally had to get into the mind of a man, and not just get into his mind, but get into his mind from the night before. How was he going to do that? An impossible situation. He's a young man in a pagan nation, being called upon to tell a man his innermost thoughts without any indication as to what those thoughts might be. And if he fails, he dies. What a situation. Daniel didn't know, but he knew that there was a God in heaven that did know. And he has the wisdom to use that knowledge effectively, and he has the capability of bringing it to pass. So Daniel prayed. God answered his prayer, because God answers prayer, and Daniel knew that too. And the prayer was answered, and Daniel received the dream and the interpretation thereof. Lessons of God's nature from verse 20. Verse 21 and 22, we see secondly, lessons of God's character. Lessons of God's character. We see first of all in verse 21, it says, "And he changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings." We see, first of all, that he changes the epochs in history. He changes the epochs in history. You say, well, what does that mean? It means that those grand and glorious events that happen in history are God's doing. The epochs of history are God's doing. He changeth the times and the seasons. It's not specifically talking, Daniel is not looking at a sundial and praising God because that sundial, the time is changing on it. He's not looking at fall and praising God that He's changing the seasons from summer to fall. What He's saying there is, God, I praise You that You are the one that is in charge of the grand plan in history. You are changing times and seasons. And we see that all throughout Scripture, that the times and the seasons is used to speak of the grand and the glorious history of the world. As we look back, as we flip through our history book, and we see those great events that happened throughout history. The Renaissance, and the Reformation, and World War I, and World War II. And we can go through and we can see great events that are happening. Times in which things are changing. When nations are rising and nations are falling. And Daniel is extolling the fact here that God is in control. Does it ever marvel you how things change? It's 2011. 20 years ago was 1991. In 1991, would it ever have occurred to you, the United States being an unrivaled superpower, that just 20 years down the line, we'd be fading into obscurity in this world? 1991, during the beginning of that great internet boom, when the economy was so well and the Dow Jones for the first time went over 10,000. And wow, the economy was doing so well, and we were so powerful, and things were going so well as internationally, and all of the things that were going on. And it seemed like nothing could slow down this great industrial superpower. And just 20 years later, we're really, really in trouble. We are fading into the distance in history. A mere couple hundred years of, not even a couple hundred years of dominance, but a couple hundred years that this nation has existed. And before us, you had Britain. Great Britain. At one point in history, it said that the sun never set on the British Empire. Why was that? Because they had so much territory all around the world that regardless of where you went in the world, you could find British soil. You could find some tract of land that was owned by Britain. They had half of India under their control. They had Vietnam under their control. They had chunks of China and chunks of Korea and chunks of Manchuria and chunks of Russia under their control. They had places in Africa. They had places in America. They had places in South America. No matter where you went, the British had a presence. And yet, it wasn't but a few years that their great dominance began to wane. And who would have ever thought that that tremendous empire, the British Empire, would fall into obscurity? And you can trace back in history, empire after empire, going back to Charlemagne, going back to the Roman Empire, going back to Alexander the Great, going back to the Medes and the Persians, going back to Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon. Great Babylon. Wow, what a nation Babylon was. Their high walls, their thick walls, unconquerable. Yet they were conquered without one arrow flying. They were conquered without a battle. We're going to see that in the next few chapters of prophecy. Wow. Why? Was it just chance? Was it just random? Well, we could think that. We could say, well, these things just happen. One leader comes and then he rises up and great things happen. Well, we could say that. Except that we see, particularly from the book of Daniel, that hundreds of years before it happened, God said it was going to happen. And all of a sudden, Daniel can do nothing but fall on his face and bless the name of God because he recognizes that all of this stuff that is going to happen in the future is under the control of a sovereign God. We learn lessons of God's nature. We learn lessons of God's character. We learn that He changes the epochs in history. We learn as well that He changes rulers of kingdoms. I've mentioned the Greek Empire, the great Greek Empire, Alexander the Great, one of the greatest military men of all time. He conquered the known world with speed and precision. In 13 years, he conquered the known world. He destroyed the Medes and the Persians. He went all the way down to Egypt. He spread his empire very quickly from 336 to 323 BC. And yet he died at the age of 32 from an unknown disease in a matter of 2 weeks. In a matter of 2 weeks, he went from mighty conqueror to dead. And you know what? The book of Daniel prophesies that that's exactly what was going to happen. Exactly what was going to happen. As a matter of fact, when Alexander the Great marched into Jerusalem to conquer it, the high priest in Jerusalem pulled out his Bible and said, "Look, you're in my Bible." And Alexander the Great was so impressed by that prophecy that was so accurate of him that he didn't destroy the city. And he ended up offering sacrifices to God. Didn't change the fact that he would die, as the Bible prophesied he would. But the fact of the matter is, Daniel is looking at this prophecy and saying, God is in control. He's in control of the great events of history. He's in control of the rulers of kingdoms. How could this happen? Because God made it happen. Because in this very book, a few chapters down the line, Daniel will prophesy it. Because God will make it happen. We see as well, at the end of that verse, it says, "He giveth wisdom unto the wise, and knowledge to them that know understanding." So God is not only this God that changes the epochs in history. He's not only this God that sets up rulers, changes rulers, brings down rulers, but He is the giver of understanding, the revealer of secrets, the giver of light. It is of the greatest of ironies today that so-called science is at the tip of the atheist's spear. If you go to an atheist and you listen to his argument, that argument will inevitably end up back at science. Well, science proves that there is no need for God. Science proves that God cannot exist. Science proves that we could make it just fine without God. Science proves that mankind is improving, that we're going to one day be able to cure death even, because science is progressing so much. And yet here we see Daniel using the reality of wisdom being given to the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding as a sure proof that there is a God in heaven. It's ironic because there is not one scientific theory that does not rely upon the absolutes of nature to uphold itself. Absolutes are an absolute necessity to science, and absolutes can only be explained if there's an absolute standard. And an absolute standard can only be explained in the biblical God. In evolution, there's no place for absolutes. There can't be a place for absolutes because everything is random chance. There would be no reason today why we wouldn't walk into this room and all the oxygen in the room wouldn't just pocket into one corner. But how can we know that we're going to walk into the room and there's going to be oxygen for us? Well, because there is stability. There is an absolute. Because the molecules that make up oxygen always react the same way. How can we know that when we jump into water, we're going to go through it instead of bouncing off of it one day? Because we know that the molecules that make up water, unless it's ice, I know, unless it's ice, water may be a bad example. Because we know that the molecules of water are going to react the way they react. Why? Because there are absolutes. Science, atheism, evolution, they can't account for absolutes. We understand that God is the giver of wisdom to the wise, that He is the giver of knowledge to them that have understanding. When I was in college, I had a computer teacher. I appreciated this computer teacher very much. He was one of those guys that it was obvious he knew computers. You would talk to him, and you couldn't understand what he was saying because he was way up here, and you're way down here. And it just he just knew so much. It seemed like there was nothing about computers that he did not know. I very much respected that man. But, you know, it was interesting to me. I taught at the college one semester, and I taught Computer Science 101. Basically, that's the class that you go into, and they hold up a mouse, and they say, "This is a mouse." And they hold up a keyboard, and they say, "This is a keyboard." And they hold up a monitor and they say, "This button turns the monitor on. And if you hit it again, it turns the monitor off." That kind of stuff. I mean, this is the basics. The very basics. And it marveled me because this man, this computer science genius, I will call him, and I don't think I'm exaggerating, probably the most knowledgeable computer science teacher in the entire department, was the other one, with me teaching CS 101. And I sat there and I thought, all of these great senior level classes that they have, and they have him teaching CS 101. Now, he taught other classes, higher level classes as well, of course. But when I thought about that, I recognized, and we should recognize today, that that teacher did not walk into CS 101 and tell his class everything that he knows. He did not walk into that class and say, okay, class, I've got a lot of stuff in this brain, and it's going to all come out on the paper, and then it's going to pop out of your pen on the test. He didn't say that because he knew that these people were in a basic class, so they needed basic information. And Daniel here is extolling a God who has wisdom and knowledge far beyond the wisdom and knowledge that he gives unto man. He's extolling a God that, though God is way up here, he's down teaching this class right here. And he's not going to tell man everything. He's not going to tell man all the mysteries of the universe, because that's not God's plan. And yet, God still gives wisdom to the wise. Those things that we do know, we know because God let us know them. Those things that we do understand, we understand because God has given them to us. Make no mistake, everything that man knows comes from a loving God who knows far more still. Lessons of God's nature. Lessons of God's character. Third and finally, we see lessons of God's faithfulness. Verse 22 says, He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with Him. I thank Thee and praise Thee, O God of my fathers, who hath given me wisdom and might, and hath made known unto me now what we desired of Thee. For Thou hast now made known unto us the king's matter. Therefore Daniel went unto Arioch, whom the king had ordained to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus unto him, Destroy not the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show unto the king the interpretation. Verses 23 and 24, lessons of God's faithfulness. Lesson number one, He gives us might and wisdom. For all that God knows and for all that we don't know, He is not a hoarder of knowledge. Rather, Daniel extols God here as a giver of knowledge. God knows all and has in His faithfulness given us all, particularly that we need for life and godliness. Have you ever stopped to marvel at that fact? To marvel at the reality that though we serve a God that has been existent from time immemorial, He always has been, He always will be, yet He has given us 66 books of inspired revelation as to who He is and as to His plan in this world regarding Himself, His purposes, and His will. Have you ever stopped to consider the vast arrays of technology around us and marvel at the amazing potential that God has put into these little minds of ours? The incredible knowledge potential that He has given to us. He's not a hoarder of knowledge. In fact, He has given us so much knowledge. God has been so faithful to His creation, and yet we have so failed in our faithfulness to Him. But what a God we serve. Daniel is extolling a God who is faithful. He gives us wisdom and might. God gives us, second lesson, what we need to serve Him best. What we need to serve Him best. He says, I thank Thee and praise Thee, O Thou God of my fathers, who hast given me wisdom and might, and hast made known unto me now what we desired of Thee, for Thou hast now made known unto us the king's matter. You know, I've often said this since I arrived here, that where God leads, God provides. That's been true in my life and in Sarah's life since we've been here, that where God has led, He has provided. And this is the message of Daniel. Daniel has stepped out in faith at God's leading to do a task. He says, I will interpret the king's dream. Of course, that means I have to know the dream. He stepped out in faith to do it, to save the wise men and to reveal the glory of God to the king of Babylon. But God was not just going to leave him alone to do the job. He couldn't. Daniel wouldn't have known the dream. Rather, God provided for Daniel that which he needed to perform the task that he had been called to do. And why is that? Well, Daniel is extolling God here for that very reason, for God's faithfulness to him. So what about us today? A passage like this offers us an opportunity to evaluate our perspective on God. As a matter of fact, thus far, the book of Daniel has offered us a perspective, hasn't it? Every week has been something about the character of God that we can look to. How's your perspective on God's nature? God is blessed. God is wisdom. God is might. How's your perspective doing? How's your perspective on God's character? Can you see God's hand in history? Can you see God's hand in rulers? And do you trust God's hand, regardless of what those rulers in Washington are doing? Regardless of what those rulers in the Middle East are doing, do you trust God's hand in the epochs of history, in the rulers that are being set up and that are being torn down? How's your perspective on God's faithfulness? God has all of these attributes. All that we mentioned about God's nature and God's character, and all of those attributes are at work for you. What a God we serve. Do you trust God's faithfulness? As we close, application is going to be a little bit different tonight. We are going to, my wife is going to come up and we're going to sing a song. This song is going to be the application. After this song, we'll have our Selah. But this song will be our application. And I'd like you, as we sing this song, to think about Daniel. Think about this prayer. Consider the prayer that Daniel prayed to thank God for his faithfulness, to thank God for his nature and for his character. As we sing this song entitled Grace, speaking of God's grace.
Seek your guidance for the day. I find my thoughts are yielding, confusion cross my way. But then when I bow to you, the challenges you guide me through, your promises are ever new. I claim them for today. Your will cannot lead me where your grace will not keep me. Your hand will protect me. I rest in your care. Your eyes overlook, your love. And when I am faltering, I still will find you there. Each new day divine is started by your hand, and graciously revealed as I seek your master plan.
As we
we consider that song this evening, as we consider the message of Daniel, that his eyes will watch over us, his love will forgive us, and when we are faltering, we still will find him there. The message of Daniel is one that says God is in control. And when we go to God, he knows. He knows. And when we go to God, we can trust him. At this time, we'll have our sila, our opportunity to allow the words of God to resonate in our hearts, to meditate upon that which God's word has spoken. And let's allow God's word, his character, his nature, his faithfulness to penetrate our hearts during the sila.